this works. That's actually announcement number one. A couple of people have asked about the recordings for weeks that they weren't here for. Unfortunately, a series of glitches on my computer and on my phone rendered all the recordings inaccessible. And all of them except for one. If you want the one, you can email me and I'm happy to send it to you. But all the ones that are on YU Torah are there, but all the other ones have been destroyed, unfortunately. And except for the one on the halachot of Nusach, which was the session from the last time we met together. That I have. I haven't uploaded it, but I can send it to you if you would like. Okay, looking forward to learning together. I apologize also for the delay in the start time, and also for the delay in the or for the lack of staples on the page. Those things are related. I was having some printer issues, and it left me without time to staple the sheets together. Okay, so welcome back to another episode session in our study together of the tefillah, the past, the practical, and the profound, where we study the halachot, the history, and the meaning of tefillah, of Jewish prayer. We've spent the past couple of months learning about the history of tefillah and the origins and the halachot of the nusach of prayer. But given that this is our last session before Passover, I thought that maybe it behooves us to spend some time talking about a tefillah-related topic that has to do with the theme of the month, the exodus from Egypt and the Passover story. Maybe this is something that we can use, if you should so choose to do so, at your own Passover seders. And so today what I'd like to do together is as follows. I'd like to learn together a famous Rashi on the Exodus story. I want to raise a challenge together. We'll raise a challenge on that Rashi based on something that we learned about tefillah. And then together we'll offer an answer to that question, which can hopefully teach us something, not just about the narrative of the Exodus, but about tefillah, about prayer itself. Okay, sound good? Okay. So as many people know, the climax of the Exodus story is the splitting of the sea. The Jewish people leave Egypt amid much fanfare and anticipation. They travel through a little bit of the desert and they reach the Red Sea, they reach the Yam Suf. And as famously what happens, actually let's read it inside. In source number one, the Torah tells us, "Vayirdifu Mitzrayim acharehem." The Egyptians chased the Jews, vayasigu otam chonim al hayam, and they basically entrapped them, because on the one side was the sea, and on the other side were the Egyptians, and the Jewish people had nowhere to go. Sound familiar? Right. Okay. And so what happened? Vayisu v'nei Yisrael et einehem, they raised their eyes, the Jewish people, and they saw v'hine Mitzrayim nosea achareihem, and they saw that the predicament they were in. And they understandably grew fearful, and they raised their voices in prayer to God. And then what happens is the Jewish people pray, or they go to Moshe, and they complain, were there not enough graves in Egypt, Hashem, that you had to take us to die out here in the desert, because we're clearly going to die, we have nowhere to go, and the Egyptians, who are, when they catch us, they're going to kill us. Halo zeha davar asher dibarnu elecha v'mitzrayim lemor chadal mimenu v'na avda et mitzrayim ki tov lanu avodat mitzrayim v'mutinu b'mibar v'yomer Moshe el ha'am. Moshe says back to the nation, al tira'u, do not fear, hityatzvu uru'u et yeshuat Hashem. Wait and see, look and see the salvation that God will bring upon you. Because the way you have seen Egypt today, you will never again see them like this, because God is going to save you and Egypt is going to be destroyed. And then Hashem says to Moshe, and this is very important for our purposes, Hashem says to Moshe, Ma titzak elai, why are you crying out to me? Daber el bnei Yisrael vayisa'u. Speak to the Jewish people and go forward and tell them to go forward. Ve'ata harim et matcha neteit yantcha al hayam. And you should raise your staff and extend it over the sea, and the sea is going to split. There will be dry land, and the Jewish people will walk on the dry land. Okay, so what happened? Just a basic summary of the story. The Jewish people are being chased by the Egyptians. They have nowhere to go. They cry out to Hashem. They complain to Moshe. Hashem tells Moshe to stop davening and to take his hand and stretch his staff over the sea, and everything will work out. The Jewish people will be saved. But there's something missing from the story that we just read. There's something missing from the story. What's missing? Anyone who want to take a gander? There's something missing. Yeah.
The Jews weren't praying.
The Jews weren't praying.
They were appealing to Moshe.
Well, they were appealing to Moshe, but they were also praying to God. It says Vayis. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem. But they cried out to God. So the Jewish people were praying, but you're on the right track in the sense that Moshe's not praying. The Torah tells us that Moshe told the Jewish people that there was going to be no issue. And then Hashem said to Moshe, why are you complaining? Why are you praying? It raises a question. Moshe wasn't praying. The Torah doesn't tell us that Moshe was praying. God tells Moshe to stop praying, but we have no record of Moshe praying in the first place, exactly like you said. It would be one thing for Moshe to daven, and then for God to say, Mati Tzakelai, why are you crying out to me? But God just says, Mati Tzakelai, seemingly in response to nothing. So,
Moshe cried out.
It doesn't say that Moshe cried out. God says to Moshe, Mati Tzakelai, why are you crying out to me? But we have no record of Moshe actually doing that. So Rashi is bothered by this. In his comments on our verse, Rashi actually addresses this issue. And he says, Matitz Akelai, in source number 2, Limdanu Shahaya Moshe Omed Mitpalel. There's no mention that Moshe prayed to Hashem, but from Hashem's response, Moshe must have been praying. In other words, how do we know that Moshe was praying? Because God told him to stop praying. It's implicit that Moshe must have been praying in that situation. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what did God say when he told him to stop praying? Rashi continues, Lo et atal ha'arich b'tfila, she'Yisrael nutunin b'tzara. It is not the proper time. Now is not the time to elongate your prayers because the Jewish people are in trouble. Okay, so Rashi is basically saying, since God was telling Moshe, stop praying to me, or why are you praying to me? It must be that Moshe was standing in prayer. And this is not Rashi's original insight. He gets it from the Mechilta, from the Medrash. It's also a Gemara, I believe, in the Sefer Sota, and Daf Lamed Zayin Amid Aleph. And in saying, why are you praying to me? Hashem was criticizing Moshe. He was saying, this is not a time, lo et atal ha'arich b'tfila, as Rashi says, this is not the time to engage in prayer, because the Jewish people are stuck and they need some assistance. So we have the answer to our first question. Our first question is, what is God responding to in telling Moshe not to pray? And Rashi says, no, God is responding to Moshe's prayer. It must be that Moshe was actually praying, and God says now is not the time for such prayer. The Jews are in trouble. Okay, good. But does anybody notice anything peculiar about this Rashi? There's something very, 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 seemingly at first glance at least, a little peculiar about it, a little bit strange. Anyone want to take a guess? Okay, I'll share what I find particularly strange about this is that God criticizes Moshe is davening. God says, stop davening. The Jewish people are you're davening to me, and the Jewish people are in trouble. And that's what God says, right? But what bothers me is, isn't that the perfect time to pray? Isn't that exactly when somebody is supposed to be davening? Rashi says that Hashem is chastising Moshe because Moshe was praying at a time of need. The Egyptians were closing in. The sea was on the other side. There was nowhere to turn. Isn't that a great opportunity for prayer? Yeah.
Yes and no.
How so?
Something in the moment. And I think that's what he's trying to say. This is one of the times when you have to do it in the moment. You have to trust yourself that you have the capacity to do so.
Excuse me, but Moses would have no idea that stretching out his hand by the sea would produce that result. I mean, all the times of the 10 plagues, he was told what to do, but how would he know to do that on his own?
Okay, great. So great points all around. So the truth is that you're holding like the Ramban. We're going to see in a second that the Ramban is going to say exactly that. But I just want to sharpen that question for a brief moment and bring into the conversation a source that we read in our very first meeting together. For those who were present, it's giving me issues again. You know what? I'm just going to just turn on the recording on my phone just to get a backup. Let's see if I can do that. Sorry about this. A bunch of people have been asking for the recordings, and I want to make sure that we can... Okay. Hopefully between these, now we're recording on two different devices or different apps, we'll be able to get a clear recording. Okay. So just to sharpen that question, if you look at the Ramban, we read this Ramban is the very first time we met about the source for tefillah. The Ramban, Nachmanides, in his commentary on Rambam, Sefer HaMitzvot, makes this very point. Do you remember this machloket about whether tefillah is a mitzvah d'oraita or not a mitzvah d'oraita? The Rambam says it's a mitzvah d'oraita. The Ramban said that generally speaking it's a mitzvah d'rabanan, except, if you read the very end of his comments in source number 3, and if it is at all true that tefillah should be a mitzvah de'oraita, nimne oto b'minyano shel harav. It should have been, and therefore it was rightfully included in the Rambam's listing of the mitzvah. Ne'amar shehi mitzvah li'et hatzarot shena'amin shehu yidbarach v'itale shomea tefillah v'hu matzil min hatzarot tefillah v'za'aka. It must be that maybe if there's any chance, the Ramban says, if there's any chance that tefillah is a mitzvah d'oraita, it's in an eight tzara, it's in a time of distress. In a time of distress, tefillah could actually be a mitzvah de'oraita. So the Ramban says that tefillah is going to be a de'oraita no matter what. The Ramban says that tefillah is a de'rabanan, but maybe in a time of distress, it's going to be a mitzvah. It's going to be a mitzvah de'oraita too. Which only serves to sharpen our question, I think. Isn't right now, when the Jews stuck and their lives are in danger, isn't that the perfect moment to daven? So what you were saying is that actually, well, maybe it's a good time to daven, but Moshe should have acted. And Moshe didn't actually act. So I think that's one answer to the question. And that's what the Ramban actually says, and we're going to see this. But it's a little bit strange, I think, that God is criticizing Moshe for davening. And the truth is, that's not what God says. God doesn't say, go and act. God says, stop davening to me. The Jewish people are struggling. And it seems strange, at least to me, it seems a little bit strange. And in fact, I guess the point of this Ramban is just to say that, you know, the truth is this is before Matan Torah, so nobody would say that tefillah is going to be a de'oraita. There was no de'oraita. This was before the Torah was given. But even though our story happened before the giving of the Torah, according to the Ramban, it's just a very important time to daven, so much so that it might actually be a mitzvah de'oraita. And Ramban almost never thinks that tefillah is a mitzvah de'oraita. So how are we to resolve this difficulty? Yeah.
I'm just curious why the Jews weren't davening, the congregation.
So they were davening. That's the truth. The Torah tells us in source number 1 in the middle there, it says, "Vayitz akub in Israel el Hashem." The Jewish people did cry out to Hashem. And Hashem seemingly was fine with that. And actually, it's going to become very relevant in just a moment. But Moshe, Hashem was not so happy about his tefillah. So, as we just alluded to, one answer is provided by the Ramban. It's not the answer I want to advance today, but it does answer the question. And since we brought the Ramban into this, since we dragged him into this discussion, we might as well demonstrate how he might answer our question. So, if you look at the Ramban al HaTorah, the Ramban in his commentary on these psukim. answers our question. He quotes the same medrash as Rashi, that Moshe, we know Moshe was davening because God told him to stop davening, and then he asks the question, and why did God criticize Moshe for davening? And then he says something very interesting. Our rabbis in the Midrash have said that Moshe was crying out in prayer. And this is the correct interpretation of the verse. He's criticizing Ibn Ezra here. He thinks the Ibn Ezra has an incorrect understanding of the verse. We're not going to go into it now. Because he didn't know what to do. God had already told Moshe, V'ikavda b'faro, I will be glorified through Paro. So Moshe should have known that this was going to end well. That's what the Ramban says. God told him it was going to end well. God said, I will be glorified through Paro, which implies that everything that Paro would be destroyed, that there would be no need for him to daven out. And yet Moshe did actually daven out. V'haya mitpalel sheyarunu Hashem derech yivchar. And he was davening that Hashem should show him should help him. Vizet ha'amati tzakilai. And this is the reason God got upset. Shahita tzarich lish'ol ma ta'ase ve'ein lo tzorech litzok. Because what should Moshe have done? He should have asked what he should do instead of just crying out. Ki kvar hodaticha v'ikavdal paro. Because God says to Moshe, I already told you what the end result was going to be. So you have no need to cry out to me that I should save you. I already told you that I was going to save you. Rather, you should have asked me, Hayat sarich lish'ol ma ta'aseh. You should have asked me what you should do. You should have not, you could have communicated with me, but not to ask me to save you. It's inappropriate when I already told you that you were going to be saved to ask me to save you. What you should have done, Ramban says, what you should have done is ask what you could do to facilitate that. And because you didn't ask that question, therefore God was criticizing Moshe. Okay, that's the answer of the Ramban. Okay, makes sense? Answer our question, the Ramban. Just to summarize our question, maybe it's harsh? I don't know. Our question was, why is Moshe chastised for davening at a time when it seems very good to daven? And our one answer is because God already told Moshe what was going to happen, so he had no need to cry out. What he should have done instead was ask Moshe what to do. Was asked Hashem what to do. That's Ramban's answer. There's no room for prayer in a situation in which God already told you what the outcome was going to be. Yeah.
So it's the conflict, because when you ask Hashem for guidance, that's tefillah too. If you say, please Hashem, guide me with the right way to do it, that's also tefillah. So it's not that he was davening, it was what the content of his davening was.
Correct. The content was that Moshe, according to the Ramban, Moshe was davening to be saved, but he should have instead davened for Hashem to tell him what to do. Okay, great. I'd like to suggest a second answer, if that's okay. Another way of answering this question, and I think it actually has profound ramifications for our understanding of Tefillah and for our understanding of the Pesach story. And let's start with a Medrash. The Medrash in Shemot Rabbah teaches us as follows, in source number 5. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shalom b'shem Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shalom said in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Basar v'dam, when it comes to humans of flesh and blood, imba ani lomar davar lefanav eino shomea heimenu. If a poor individual should approach to say something, people do not pay such an individual as much attention. It's sad that that's the reality, that's unfortunate. People should, you know, be respected and heard out, regardless of how much money they have. But the Midrash is commenting on the psychological reality that we often lend a deeper line of credit to certain people before they even open their mouths than we do to other people. And so, if a person who is struggling financially opens up their mouth to say something, they will not be taken as seriously as im ba'ashir lomar devar, as a wealthy person who comes to say something. Miyad hu shomea umikabalo. When a wealthy person comes to say something, everybody always wants to listen, and that person's always going to be accepted just because of how much money that they have. But the Midrash says, Avala Kadosh Baruch Hu Einochin. God does not work that way. Ela hakol shavin lefanav. Rather, before God, everyone is equal. Teidalicha, how do we know this? Learn from the fact that Hare Moshe Rabban shel kol hanavim. Moshe, the greatest, the teacher of all the other prophets. Katuv bo Masha katuv ba'ani. It says regarding Moshe's prayer, the same thing it says regarding the prayer of a poor person. B'Moshe k'tiv in Tehillim, that verse, that chapter of Tehillim starts, Tefila le'Moshe isha Elokim, a prayer of Moshe, man of God. Uva'ani, and just several chapters later in the same Sefer Tehillim, the prayer starts, Tefila le'ani. Ki atof lifnei Hashem yispoch sicho. One says tefila leMoshe, one says tefila leAni. The fact that both a poor person and Moshe have prayers that start off the same exact way teach us that prayer is prayer, zot tefila in the words of the Medrash, v'zot tefila, lehodiacha. Both of these are considered prayer, and both of these prayers are considered equal. In other words, the message is as follows. When it comes to people, people tend to assign different levels of importance depending on who's making the statement. Some people enjoy a deeper line of credit even before they open their mouths than other people do. But when it comes to the prayers of people, when it comes to God, God treats the prayers of all people the same. God does not prioritize or treat more favorably the prayer of one person over another person, even if that person is more wealthy or more famous or is a Moshe Rabbeinu. God does not prioritize the prayers of those individuals. Now the truth is, maybe we can have a shir on this topic alone. There's a teshuvah, Rabbi Yamin Zilber in the Az Nidbaru and Chelek Yud Aleph and Simon Nun Bet, I believe, talks about how this could be the case if we clearly ask Tzaddikim to daven for us and things like that. That's not our topic right now, although maybe we can do a series on this because you can really spend the whole shir on this. But okay, that's what the Medrash says. The prayer of everybody is equal. So how does this help us? How does this help us? Well, I think that if you look at the psukim that we read at the outset of our session that describe the story, one of the psukim says as follows, in source number 6, when the Torah tells us, Uparo hikriva yisuvene Yisrael et einehem, as Paro drew near, the Israelites caught sight of v'hinei Mitzrayim noseach reihem, the Egyptians chasing them, vayir'u me'od, and they grew fearful, vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. And the Jewish people cried out to Hashem. That's what the pasuk, okay, says. Excuse me. So we know that, at least according to the Peshat in the Midrash that we just read, God treats the prayers of everyone the same, right? We saw that. We read that. That was the Midrash. And, on the other hand, we know that the Jews had already prayed, right? So maybe there's room to say that this was the reason that God got upset with Moshe's prayer. The Jewish people already prayed, and Moshe's prayer, being no better than theirs because all prayers are equal, was superfluous. It was unnecessary. God is frustrated with Moshe's prayer because maybe Moshe's prayer in this moment denies the reality that the Jews had prayed and a fundamental tenet expressed by our Medrash that all prayers are equal. In fact, if you look at Rashi, Rashi had specified that God says to Moshe, what does God say to Moshe in that Rashi in source number 1? God says to Moshe, Lo et atala ha'arich batfila she'Yisrael netunim b'tzara. Now is not the time, Moshe, to pray at length when the Jewish people are stuck in trouble. That's what Rashi had said. And we had interpreted that Rashi in a very specific way. We had interpreted that Rashi to mean that God was saying to Moshe, now is not the time to pray. Maybe because, like the Ramban said, that Moshe should have instead been asking what he could do to help. But maybe the pshat in Rashi, if you look at the words of Rashi, is that it means Yisrael netunim b'tzara, the Jewish people are stuck in distress, and hence there is no need for you to pray, because they already prayed, because I've answered them, Moshe, your prayer is superfluous. In other words, Why did God get upset at Moshe for davening? Well, one answer, Ramban, because Moshe should have asked what he should do instead of just asking for help. Okay. Number two, maybe it's because Moshe had no need to daven. The Jewish people had already davened, and Moshe's prayer has nothing over the prayers of the rest of Bnei Israel. The Medrash teaches us that Moshe's prayer, that hakol zot tefillah, v'zot tefillah, hakol shavin. Those are the words of the Medrash. The tefillah of everyone is considered equal. And so maybe there's no need for Moshe to pray if the Jewish people had, already prayed. And in fact, I think this is borne out by the Mishnah in Maseches Tainus. If you look at the Mishnah, In Maseches Tainus, the Mishnah here is talking about the structure of communal prayers on a fast day. We don't really have these anymore, but the community, in cases of lack of rainfall, would basically appoint a leader to pray, a shaliach tzibur, and the shaliach tzibur would adjust somewhat the regular Shemona Esrei. So on a fast day, you know, we have a normal Shemona Esrei that we say every other day. But on a fast day, we would adjust when there was a lack of rainwater, for example. We would adjust the Shemona Esrei. We would say a different version of the Shemona Esrei. And so, in the second bracha of Shemona Esrei, which is Mechaye Hametim, the second bracha of Shemona Esrei, Baruch Atah Hashem Mechaye Hametim, right? The Chazan would add the following. On the top of page number 3. Mi she'ana et avotenu al hayam suf, hu ya'ane etchem v'yishmal kol tza'akatchem hayom hazeh baruch ata Hashem zolcher hanishkachos. That's what he would say in the second bracha of Shemona Esrei on one of these communal fast days. Blessed are you, Hashem, who remembers the forgotten, he who has answered our avotenu, our forefathers at the Red Sea. Which shows us what? What does this show us? That God responded not just to the prayer of Moshe, not to the individual. It says avotenu in the plural, al hayam suf. The prayers of the many at Kriyat Yam Suf. Maybe this illustrates our argument that it was the people who prayed first, and the people whose prayer God answered at the sea. Moshe's prayer was superfluous, and that's why God wasn't interested in it. In fact, and I think this is the most convincing source of all, it's the Medrash itself. If you look back at the Medrash we just cited, what does the Torah say? Uchtiv, in source number 8, our very point. Vayitzaku el Hashem. The Jewish people cried out to Hashem. What happened then? Hitchil Moshe afhu mitpalel lifnei hamakom. Moshe said to himself, you know what? I'm going to try davening too. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. When that happened, God said to Moshe the following. Ma ata omeidu mitpalel. Why are you standing in a prayer? Kivar hitpalulu banai v'shamati tfilatam. My children have already prayed, and I have heard their prayer. Shene'emar, because the Torah tells us, ma titzak elai. And it is for this reason that God was upset with Moshe, asking why he davened.
But the waters haven't divided yet.
No, they haven't divided yet. That's true. But God had a fish, and yeah, you're right, they had a divided
Moshe
yet.
Was standing there, but I'm
right, so, okay, so we'll come back to that in 1 second. I just want to summarize, okay? The Torah tells us, if you were paying attention, you get the whole shiur here. The Torah tells us that when the Jews were at the Red Sea, God got angry at Moshe for davening. And we had asked the question, Rashi said that this means Moshe was davening, and God got angry for davening at him at such a time, and we asked, well, isn't that the perfect time to daven? And we gave two answers. Number one, the Ramban, that Moshe knew God would save them, so he didn't need to waste his time praying to be saved. Rather, he should have asked what he could do to facilitate that. That's the Ramban. And number two, the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah. The prayers of all people are equal, and the Jews already prayed. And so therefore, God did not want Moshe's prayer. Because for Moshe to pray in a time like that would deny a fundamental tenet of tefillah. And we're here to learn about tefillah. The fundamental tenet is that the prayers of every single person are equally valuable to Hashem. Hakol shavin, zu tefillah, v'zu tefillah. And I think that this illustrates for us an important idea, one that I think undergirds all of our discussions about tefillah in this room. Your prayers matter. So what if you're not a tzaddik like Moshe? So what if you're not having a good day or a good year, religiously speaking? Nobody should ever feel, chas v'shalom, like their prayers do not have a place in this world, or that their prayers are unimportant, or that their prayers are unworthy. My prayer matters, your prayer matters, your prayer matters. All of our prayers matter. And in fact, it was the prayer of the masses that ultimately moved our redemption forward. In just a week's time, we will gather together, over a week's time, a little bit, we will gather together at the Seder. If anybody, by the way, needs a place for the Seder, please let me know. But in just over a week's time, we will gather together for the Seder, and we will talk about redemption. And I think it's wonderful and important, and I think it's a beautiful medrash, to know that in our Exodus' most harrowing moment, in the thick of battle when the fear of death and destruction loomed large, what moved the people forward was not the prayer of their saintly leader, it was the heartfelt tefillot of people like you and me. And that, I think, is something that everybody should remember. So, like always, I hope that you learned something, and let's plan to meet on Monday of Chol HaMoed Pesach. I'm a little bit anxious to make sure that this recording went through, but I'm going to stick around and we can schmooze and answer some questions. Yeah, you had a question first, though, that I didn't answer, right?
I was reacting sympathetically to Moshe, to Eitzar.